onto this computer. Okay, and recording up here.
Hey.
All right. Hey, Pam. Hello, everyone. This is Dr. Roger Paul, and tonight we are going to continue our study on paper 132 of the Urantia book. This is part two of this series on paper 132, and this is on paper 1459 of the original book, or paper 132.3.6, and all the rest of it.
Alexa, off.
Okay, so we're ready to go here. Let me change the screen. Rodney may be a few minutes late, so he's cleaning out his driveway. Somebody hit his driveway in the car.
Oh.
So, anyway, so let's get started here. Dear, do you want to start reading tonight?
Okay.
Faith acts to release the superhuman activities of the divine spark, the immortal germ that lives within the mind of man, and which is a potential of eternal survival. Plants and animals survive in time by the technique of passing on from one generation to another identical particles of themselves. The human soul, personality of man, survives mortal death by identity association with this indwelling spark of divinity, which is immortal and which functions to perpetuate the human personality upon a continuing and higher level of progressive universe existence. The concealed seed of the human soul is an immortal spirit. The second generation of the soul is the first of a succession of personality manifestations of spiritual and progressing existences, terminating only when this divine entity attains the source of its existences, the personal source of all existence, God, the universal Father.
Okay, so you remember this is Jesus talking in this. They don't have it in red, but they're reinterpreting it. Did you mute there? There we go. They're reinterpreting it for us to understand it. But I want to really break this down tonight because this is Jesus teaching us how we survive. Okay. And the first thing he talks about is the fact that the divine spark, that's the thought adjuster. Okay. Is the immortal germ. In other words, it's the germ that gets germinated with the soul. When the soul and the germ of the thought adjuster fuse, you become a personal child of God at that point. And that's what they're talking about, the potential of eternal survival. So you go on past this world in the first life of the Urantia worlds, and eventually you fuse with the father fragment, and that's what makes you immortal at that point. At that point, you're temporary still, just like you are on this world. But if you never fuse with the adjuster, you would cease to exist eventually. Okay, so that's very important to understand. And Jesus is explaining how plants and animals, get this, animals. Did y'all ever notice that? Mm-hmm. Plants and animals survive in time by a technique of passing from one generation to another, an identical particle of themselves. So that makes you think that the animals are reincarnated or reconstituted in the same sort of animal or being all over again, doesn't it?
So in the mansion worlds?
Well, in the mansion worlds or on this planet even. Right? Hmm. Because he says plants and animals survive in time by this technique of passing on part of themselves in the next generation. So, in other words, then that plant or animal dies, part of it is going to be reconstituted in the same form, either in this life or in the life to come. Make sense? That's why I think that animals survive death.
I know. I love that.
You know, and it's this is straight from Jesus. So don't ask me, ask Jesus. Okay. So, and then he goes on to tell us that the soul, the personality. Now notice they put soul, parentheses, personality. Okay. So that makes you think that your soul is a manifestation of your personality. Does that make sense to y'all? So that personality which you're building up goes into the soul so that when you're reconstituted on the mansion worlds, what makes you who you are again is the spark of that soul waking back up on the mansion. And it's still you. It's your personality, okay? And then eventually you merge with the spark of divinity again, which is the thought adjuster. And when you do that, you automatically have the GPS from God to eventually find God the Father again on paradise, because that's the whole purpose of that spark within you, is to help you find God. And when you become a child of God himself, the children of God, man or woman, you become a permanent citizen of the cosmos or the universe. And it's that soul, that human soul, which is your personality, and the thought adjuster coming in together to manifest this existence that never dies. It goes on through all existences, and it takes you back to the universal Father. Is that clear as mud?
Amazing.
It's pretty amazing, isn't it? So there's your little thing about plants and animals surviving. I knew it was in here, just hadn't read it in so long. Okay. I'll take the next one since Diane just... Where'd you go, dear? Your computer just kicked off.
That's because of this power thing.
You're going to have to read through mine again tonight.
Okay.
Okay.
It
says it's charging. And I don't know why it's doing this. This is not plugged in yet. So that's probably why it's not charging. Y'all excuse me for a minute. This plug is coming out. Is it even going to charge? There we go. I know, it's the plug itself. Yeah. And it's not showing that it's charging, so it's not going to come back. I'm going to have to get you another plug.
Okay.
You can just read next to me. Okay. Okay, so let me go on to the next one. Human life continues, survives, because it has a universe function. Nothing that does not have a universe function will survive life on this planet. The task of finding God, the faith-activated soul of man, cannot stop short of the attainment of this goal of destiny. And when it does once achieve this divine goal, it can never end because it has become like God, eternal. Okay? Now, let me mention something here since we're talking about continuing on. Do y'all think AI, all these robots and everything, are going to continue on past this life?
Of course not.
No, they have no soul, do they? They have no lasting value past their mechanical functioning of this planet. And that may be 1,000 years. We don't know how long these things are going to last. But when they kick off, they're gone, right? Just like Diane's computer just crapped out. Okay? It's the same principle. When it's not got power, it's gone. Yeah, just like that. I have to get you a new cable there, probably.
Yeah, probably.
I could probably swap these out. Hey, y'all, bear with me a second.
1% charge.
There we go. That one's charging. Let me see if I can get Diane back on for everybody. Give me a second. In the meantime, Letch, would you take the next paragraph while I'm messing with the computer?
Okay. Spiritual evolution is an experience of the increasing and voluntary choice of goodness, attended by an equal and progressive diminution of the possibility of evil. With the attainment of finality of choice for goodness and of completed capacity for truth appreciation, there comes into existence a perfection of beauty and holiness whose righteousness eternally inhibits the possibility of the emergence of even the concept of potential evil. Such a God-knowing soul casts no shadow of doubting evil when functioning on such a high spirit level of divine goodness.
Okay, so as we progress evolutionarily into the spiritual realm, evil becomes less and less of a possibility. Okay, so the diminution of evil gets less and less over time, and your appreciation for goodness and truth increases over time. So as you become more and more God-knowing and you become more and more like God, then that shadow of evil that bothers us so much in this life just disappears over time. Okay, so that's good to know, if nothing else. Okay, let's go on to the next one. Pam, would you take this one, please?
The presence of the paradise spirit in the mind of man constitutes the revelation promise and the faith pledge of an eternal existence of divine progression for every soul seeking to achieve identity with this immortal and indwelling spirit fragment of the universal Father.
Notice here it says the mind, the presence, the paradise spirit in the mind of man. That means right now. Okay, they're not talking about in the future. Gives us the revelation promise. In other words, it's revealed to us that we have a faith pledge of eternal existence from God the Father himself. And that, if that's the case, it's going to come to fruition, whether you want it to or not. Okay, Jane, would you take the next one?
Universe progress is characterized by increasing personality freedom because it is associated with the progressive attainment of higher and higher levels of self-understanding and consequent voluntary self-restraint. The attainment of perfection of spiritual self-restraint equals completeness of universe freedom and personal liberty. Faith fosters and maintains man's soul in the midst of the confusion of his early orientation in such a vast universe, whereas prayer becomes the great unifier of the various inspirations of the creative imagination and the faith urges of a soul trying to identify itself with the spirit ideals of the indwelling and associated divine presence.
Okay, so as you grow and your personality grows, that personality freedom and the progressive attainment of higher and higher levels makes us have more and more self-restraint. And as we learn to restrain ourselves, in actuality, our freedom in the universe increases. So it's like a one-on-one thing. As you restrain yourself, your freedom to do even more gets more and more. And that was the problem with the Lucifer Rebellion. You remember that Lucifer taught, his whole thing was that he wanted unlimited freedom, which he really already had, but he didn't realize that, so he did not have any personal self-control. And since he lacked the self-control, he put himself in a spiritual prison, in essence. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So the more he allowed himself to not have any self-restraint, then the more and more he went towards darkness. And look at all the beings that he, in essence, got to follow him into that same situation. So it was this false liberty that he was preaching that didn't exist. It was just the opposite of what he was teaching. All right. Let's see here. You're up again, dear. Here, let me Okay. Nevin.
Nevin was greatly impressed.
Come a little closer here, because I can't even hear.
We can hear her fine.
Can you hear? Okay.
Yeah.
Nevin was greatly impressed by these words, as he was by each of his talks with Jesus. These truths continued to burn within his heart, and he was of great assistance to the latter arriving preachers of Jesus' gospel.
Okay, so because of these talks that Jesus was having with people, he prepared for the preaching that was coming shortly after he died. So, you know, he really prepared the way. Okay, let's see, four, personal ministry. Somebody ugly just popped on the screen.
Who are you talking about?
I was wondering if you're going to pick that up.
I was debating.
I'm just joking, Gary.
I know.
Nice to see you again.
Nice to see you tonight. Okay, here we go. Personal ministry four. Jesus did not devote all of his leisure time in Rome to this work in preparing men and women to become future disciples in the coming kingdom. He spent much of his time gaining an intimate knowledge of all races and classes of men who lived in this, the largest and most cosmopolitan city in the world. In each of these numerous human contacts, Jesus had a double purpose. He desired to learn their reaction to the life they were living in the flesh, and he was also minded to say or do something to make that life richer and more worthwhile. His religious teachings during these weeks were no different than those who characterize his later life as a teacher of the 12 and the preacher of the multitudes. So his goal was to learn about people, prepare the way for the future for the disciples, but he was also, his number one goal in doing this was to each and every person he interacted with, he wanted to improve their life, make it better. Right. And really, if you think about it, when we go through life, that really should be our goal daily, shouldn't it? When we interact with people, is to improve their life, make their life better, and give them a better attitude in the struggles through this existence, because it's not easy going through this world. I'm not telling y'all
and anything. Making choices.
And making choices. I'm not telling y'all anything you don't already know, right? Okay, Letch, would you take the next one, please?
Okay. Always the burden of his message was the fact of the Heavenly Father's love and the truth of his mercy, coupled with the good news that man is a faith son of the same God of love. Jesus's usual technique of social contact was to draw people out and into talking with him by asking them questions. The interview would usually begin by his asking them questions and end by their asking him questions. He was equally adept in teaching by either asking or answering questions. As a rule, to those he taught the most, he said the least. Those who derived most benefit from his personal ministry were overburdened, anxious, and dejected mortals who gained much relief because of the opportunity to unburden their souls to a sympathetic and understanding listener, and he was all that and more. And when these maladjusted human beings had told Jesus about their troubles, always was he able to offer practical and immediately helpful suggestions, looking towards the correction of their real difficulties. Albeit, he did not neglect to speak words of present comfort and immediate consolation. And invariably would he tell these distressed mortals about the love of God and impart the information by various and sundry methods that they were the children of this loving Father in heaven.
Okay, so he taught people by questions and answers, didn't he? He listened as much as he taught. Okay, and that's very hard to do for most of us in life, right? We like to talk. We like to hear our own voices. So he did just the opposite. He let them talk, and then he instilled little jewels of information so that it benefited each and every person that he met. All right, Pam, would you take the next one?
In this manner, during the sojourn in Rome, Jesus personally came into affectionate and uplifting contact with upward of 500 mortals of the realm. He thus gained a knowledge of the different races of mankind, which he could never have acquired in Jerusalem, and hardly even in Alexandria. He always regarded this 6 months as one of the richest and most informative of any like period of his earth life.
You see why this fits right in with the bestowal plan? Because the purpose of the bestowal was to understand the human mortal life. And to do that, in this particular situation, he got to interact with over 500 different types of people. So he got a pretty good idea of how all types of people on this planet lived and interacted. And that's exactly what he was supposed to do during his final bestowal experience as a human.
Plus the caravans that would come through.
Plus the caravans, that's right. So later on, you know, I want to bring us this point. The thing we have the most information before the Urantia book came out about Jesus was the New Testament. And very, very little about his religion, philosophy, or anything else was really taught in the New Testament. Because during that period of time, he had already passed his learning experience in the bestowal, and he had gotten to the point of his teaching experience to the masses. And he could only be general most of the time and not very specific like he is during teaching during this period of time. So this is really the most valuable information that we have about Jesus's life. And you can see why the midwayers wanted to tell this story to the world, because it had never been told. Make sense? Mm-hmm. So we're really fortunate. All right. Pam, I think you're up.
No, I just read.
Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. Yes. Jane, would you take the next one?
Okay. As might have been expected, such a versatile and aggressive man could not thus function for 6 months in the world's metropolis without being approached by numerous persons who desired to secure his services in connection with some business, or more often, for some project of teaching, social reform, or religious movement. More than a dozen such pro-offers were made, and he utilized each one as an opportunity for imparting some thought of spiritual ennoblement by well-chosen words or by some obliging service. Jesus was very fond of doing things, even little things, for all sorts of people.
So you can see, because of his influences and his knowledge, that he was in great demand there in Rome for many, many different types of people. All right, Gary, would you take the next one? We saved this kind of small print just for you, Gary.
I want you to know that in the previous couple sections, he said we're supposed to add joy to everybody's life that we can as we
That's
meet.
That's right. Yeah.
And I've accomplished that.
That's good.
Throughout my life, I've been called a joke.
because you have humor, Gary, that's why I rib you so much and I love you, you know? Because, you know, there's not many people you can joke around with and kid and then not take everything seriously. You know, and life's too serious to take anything too very seriously, right? Mm. So, anyway.
It is. Okay, you ready?
We're ready.
He talked with a Roman senator on politics.
So, yeah, okay, I'm sorry.
And statesmanship. And this one contact with Jesus made such an impression on the legislator that he spent the rest of his life vainly trying to induce his colleagues to change the course of ruling policy from the ideal of the government supporting and feeding the people to that of the people supporting the government. Jesus spent one evening with a wealthy slaveholder talking about man as a son of God, and the next day, this man, Claudius, gave freedom to 117 slaves. That's where you get July 17th or June 7th. Yeah. He lived at dinner with a Greek, he certainly visited at dinner with a Greek physician, telling him that his patients had minds and souls as well as bodies, and thus led his ability to doctor, and thus led this able doctor to attempt a far-reaching ministry of his fellow man. He talked with all sorts of people in every walks of life. The only place in Rome he did not visit was the public baths. He refused to accompany his friends to the baths because of the sex promiscuity which there prevailed.
And of course, this would have been repulsive to a Jew, wouldn't it? So he did not do that. All right. So notice that he did give suggestions for the politics of the day to this man also.
You
now
know,
here's a yeah go ahead Gary.
I was just thinking about that. You know, the he said that the people should support the government and the government should not support the people.
Right.
So are we in line with,
not even close. Not even close.
Taxes, we support the government.
We do.
But with the social services the government provides, that goes against it.
No, it doesn't, Gary.
I'm just trying to analyze this.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. He said in other places that those who are not able to support themselves, the community should support them. And that's in line with that. Okay. But back then, they did not have a way to get the people to support the government other than overtaxing them. And just like it is in this day, which is really terrible, but just like in this day, we are taxed. We're not overtaxed in this day and time. The trouble in this day and time, we have corrupt politicians that don't stand up to what they're supposed to do. So they spend the money like it's their own and they enrich themselves. So instead of being what am I looking for? Taking care of the money properly. They are actually spending it hand over fist on programs that are non-essential, not right, and they're giving money to the wrong people. And the biggest part is the politicians that go into office poor and they come out multimillionaires. You know, there is something wrong with the system when they do that. And there's no way around that. Politicians should not come out rich. They should not come out any better off than they were when they went in. And there's not a single one of them that's in office today that goes by those rules. Okay? So our whole system is messed up. This is the gospel according to Roger Paul. Okay? So, but we should support people that are not able to take care of themselves, the elderly, those who are disabled, that sort of thing. That should be built in our government plan. But what should not be built in our government plan is the waste, fraud, and abuse we just found out about, you know, this year. That should not be part of government. And when it's discovered, it should be immediately stopped and cut off. There should be no voting about it. It should stop immediately. And the whole idea or system it's coming from needs to be reformulated and corrected. Okay? So that's my political thing today. All right. So that's what they're talking about there, Gary, in that, you know, it's Government by representation is the right thing to do. Government by stealing and becoming rich is not the right thing to do. Okay? That's why, I always come back to this. There's a paper called Government on a Neighboring Planet. You want to figure out how to do it right, read that paper because it spells it out how you can do it properly. Okay? So go look that up. That's what it's called, Government on a Neighboring Planet.
I read that several years back when I was first starting this, and I still remember that chapter. That's been years ago.
But it's a good blueprint. It's funny because someone from the Urantia Foundation, when the book came out, sent a copy of that paper to every senator and every congressman. You think it did any good? No. Greed is a powerful force. That's all I can say. Okay, Derek, do you want me to read this? You want to try to take it here. You can read it? Okay, here, take a microphone.
To a Roman soldier as they walked along the Tiber, he said, "Be brave of heart as well as of hand. Dare to do justice and be big enough to show mercy. Compel your lower nature to obey your higher nature as you obey your superiors. Reverse goodness and
Revere goodness.
reverse.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Revere goodness and exalt truth. Choose the beautiful in place of the ugly. Love your fellows and reach out for God with a whole heart, for God is your Father in heaven."
Love, 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 love. That's what it comes back to, doesn't it? He teaches it over and over and over again. So you can do your duty as a soldier. You can do your duty as a citizen and still be within the will of God. That's the whole point of this. We can all live that way, and that's the way we will live when we get to the mansion worlds. To the speaker at the forum, he said, "Your obedience is pleasing." Eloquence is pleasing. I can't hardly read this.
You want me to do it?
Your logic is admirable. Your voice is pleasant. But your teaching is hardly true. If you could only enjoy this
Inspiring.
inspiring satisfaction of knowing God as your spiritual father, then you might employ your powers of speech to liberate your fellows from the bondage of darkness and from the slavery of ignorance. This was the Marcus who heard Peter preach in Rome and became his successor. When they crucified Simon Peter, it was this man who defied the Roman persecutors, and boldly continued to preach the new gospel. And this was a Roman, right? Quite interesting. Good quote on that one. And there's a picture of Rome and some more pictures of Rome. You can look these up from the slides. All right, let's go on. Letch, would you take the next one? Letch, would you like me to change this color on this print real quick?
Yellow looks good.
Oops. Let me
I
do
think
it.
it had yellow the last session I was here.
Yeah, I went through. I didn't think about it on this paper. I went through. What are we on? 4-8.
Well, you can always say your wife didn't remind you to do it, so.
I know, it's a shame on you, dear.
You should learn to duck when you say that, though.
Here we go. Just that fast.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Letch, and take this one.
Me?
No, let's let the other Letch do it.
Meeting a poor man who had been falsely accused, Jesus went with him before the magistrate, and having been granted special permission to appear in his behalf, made that superb address, in the course of which he said, "Justice makes a nation great, and the greater a nation, the more solicitous will it be to see that injustice shall not befall even its most humble citizen. Woe upon any nation when only those who possess money and influence can secure ready justice before its courts. It is the sacred duty of a magistrate to acquit the innocent as well as to punish the guilty, upon the impartiality, fairness, and integrity of its courts, the endurance of a nation depends. Civil government is founded on justice, even as true religion is founded on mercy. The judge reopened the case, and when the evidence had been sifted, he discharged the prisoner. Of all Jesus's activities during these days of personal ministry, this came the nearest to being a public appearance.
We need more lawyers like him.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, what is the most corrupt profession in the world?
Lawyers.
I think y'all got it.
Politics is coming in there. You got
well, it. Yeah, but you know what? Did you notice most of the politicians, a good percentage of them, comes from lawyers. Mm-hmm. And speaking of governments, you know, I hate to say this. I'm working on these other slides while I'm talking to y'all. But I hate to say this, but have you noticed how stupidity is reigning supreme in the people we are electing into government positions? Oh. Is it just me, or do y'all realize this also?
Yes, years yes. ago.
It's very obvious, isn't it? I mean, there's so many people out there that are in high, high government positions that not only don't know what they're talking about, but some of them are just plain downright stupid. You know, you hear them talking, you think, wait a minute, somebody elected this person into this position? And I know it's just not me. I know other people notice this too. But some of the politicians that are out there, really, if you think about it, if they would have made some of these suggestions when they were in high school or anywhere at college or anywhere else, they would have been laughed right out of the room. But that's not the case in our case, is it? We got so many people in high positions that can't make a sentence. They can't, you know, they can't speak properly. They don't understand what they're saying. They criticize people that do know what they're saying, and it goes on and on and on and on. And I don't want to harp on it forever, but it's pretty darn pathetic is what it boils down to. All right, let me find my place back here again. Yeah, give me a second. Four, eight.
You're supposed to go to section 9.
You mean the next section? 5?
Okay, we'll accept that.
All right. Okay, so who's up again? I've lost my place again. I think you are, dear.
Okay.
Let me mute and you can take.
I don't hear anything.
Don't hear you either.
You don't hear me?
Sorry. No.
Wait a minute. Oh. I muted it and then gave her my mic. Let me
start talk over. About stupid.
Hey, Roger, you going to run for politics now?
Yeah, I'm going to run for senator next week. So I was practicing. No, I'm not going to be doing that. Okay. Let's try it again there.
Oh, okay. 5, counseling the rich man.
Yeah, there we go.
1, a certain rich man, a Roman citizen and a Stoic, became greatly interested in Jesus' teachings, having been introduced by Agamemnon. After many intimate conferences, this wealthy citizen asked Jesus what he would do with wealth if he had it. And Jesus answered him, I would bestow material wealth for the enhancement of material life, even as I would minister knowledge, wisdom, and spiritual service for the enrichment of the intellectual life, the endowment of the social life.
Ennoblement.
Ennoblement, excuse me. Ennoblement of the social life and the advancement of the spiritual life. I would administer material wealth as a wise and effective trustee of the resources of one generation for the benefit and ennoblement of the next and succeeding generations.
So this information Jesus is telling this man is what he would do if he had the wealth himself. Now, he will go on in later chapters to tell us about what the proper way to distribute wealth was. And you have to remember that these talks are specific for the individuals he was talking to. It doesn't mean it should be this way for every single person. Okay, so they're specific for this person, but you can get the overall meaning of what Jesus is talking about, how that wealth is not in this lifetime, wealth is not something of your personal, it's not something for yourself, it's for all people. So if you're fortunate enough to be wise enough get a great amount of wealth, with that wealth comes a great responsibility to dole out that wealth to different groups and different things that benefit mankind, not just yourself. It's not right if you go out and win the lottery to go out and buy 100 cars, because you don't need 100 cars. That's being selfish. But it is right if you just,
Egotistical.
it's egotistic. That's exactly right, Pam. But it is right for you to go out and share that wealth in avenues which you think is going to benefit mankind the most. And that's the proper use of wealth. Now, you're entitled to a certain percentage of it for the luck of the draw or for your own work, but the rest of it should be put out there in the universe for other things that benefits all of mankind, right? Okay. Let's see here, Letch. I think you're up again. Letch?
Okay. But the rich man was not fully satisfied with Jesus's answer. He made bold to ask again, "But what do you think a man in my position should do with his wealth? Should I keep it or should I give it away?" And when Jesus perceived that he really desired to mo know more of the truth about his loyalty to God and his duty to men, he further answered, "My good friend, I discern that you are a sincere seeker after wisdom and an honest lover of truth. Therefore, am I minded to lay before you my view of the solution of your problems having to do with the responsibilities of wealth. I do this because you have asked for my counsel, and in giving you this advice, I am not concerned with the wealth of any other rich man. I am offering advice only to you and for your personal guidance. If you honestly desire to regard your wealth as a trust, if you really wish to become a wise and efficient steward of your accumulated wealth, then would I counsel you to make the following analysis of the sources of your riches? Ask yourself and do your best to find the honest answer. Whence came this wealth? And as a help in the study of the sources of your great fortune, I would suggest that you bear in mind the following 10 different methods of amassing material wealth."
Okay, notice him here. He said this advice is just for you, not for any other wealthy man, right? So this is advice for him. But from this advice, we can take certain wise decisions for our own personal lives if we happen to become wealthy, right?
Can we change this thing to a certain and mention my good friend Bill Gates? and send it to him?
I doubt that he would read it, Gary. Seriously, I've been posting. I posted my new book on X the other day, but I don't expect Elon Musk to stop and go order it. He's a busy man, and I don't expect anybody else to. But I
And he's
post.
angry too now.
Yeah. And I posted it on Instagram and Facebook and everywhere so that people could learn spiritual things, right? But I don't expect any of them to really go out and buy it. So I would be surprised if I get a call from somebody. I would be shocked. All right, I'm going to read since I skipped over myself in reading here. Number one, inherited wealth, riches derived from parents and other ancestors. He's given the list of the ways people get wealth. Two, discovered wealth, riches derived from the uncultivated resources of Mother Earth, like gold and things like that. Trade wealth, riches obtained as a fair profit in the exchange and barter of material goods. Okay, that would be somebody like Trump, right? Because he got his riches fairly, and trading and working in real estate. Unfair wealth, riches derived from the unfair exploitation of the enslavement of one's fellows. That's why you can't have slaves, right? That type
Unfair wealth.
unfair wealth, that's what you would call that, right? Because it's from the sweat and work of other people that you don't deserve. All right. Five, interest wealth, income derived from the fair and poor. I'm sorry, just and fair earning possibilities of investment capital. In other words, if you invest properly, you have the right to that wealth, that increase in which you have gotten. All right, Pam, would you take the next ones?
Six, genius wealth. Riches accruing from the rewards of the creative and inventive endowments of the human mind.
In other words, a book or something like that. You write your own book, you deserve some of the money from doing that. Go ahead, Jamie.
Seven, accidental wealth. Riches derived from the generosity of one's fellows or taking origin in the circumstance of life. Eight, stolen wealth, the riches secured by unfairness, dishonesty, theft, and fraud. Nine, trust funds, wealth lodged in your hands by your fellows for some specific use now or in the future.
Now, hold up there for a minute. Is that not what the government is in business to do, to handle trust wealth? We give the politicians the wealth to do what needs to be done. So that is a trust. It's not their money to spend, right? All
And they're
right.
supposed to get rich off of it. It's what it says, sources of wealth.
Yeah, but
I
it's
think
not
they're
a.
following his lead.
Yeah, no, but they're not supposed to keep that wealth, right? All right, go on, Pam.
10. Earned wealth, riches derived directly from your own personal labor, the fair and just reward of your own daily efforts of mind and body.
Okay, so most of them are things that you get wealth and which is okay, right? But the stolen wealth and things like that is not okay. Those types of wealth should be returned. Okay, so Jane, would you take the next one? Boy, we're running out of time again, aren't we?
Okay. And so my friend, if you would be a faithful and just steward of your large fortune before God and in service to man, you must approximately divide your wealth into these 10 grand divisions and then proceed to administer each portion in accordance with the wise and honest interpretation of the laws of justice, equity, fairness, and true efficiency. Albeit the God of heaven would not condemn you if sometimes you erred in doubtful situations on the side of merciful and unselfish regard for the distress of the suffering victims of the unfortunate circumstances of mortal life. When in honest doubt about the equity and justice of material situations, let your decision favor those who are in need, for those who suffer the misfortune of undeserved hardship.
Now, do y'all remember when Jesus was outside the temple in Jerusalem, and he was passing out alms, and they talked about how Jesus never allowed the disciples to give out alms, did they? Why do you think that was? It's because he based all his almsgiving according to these 10 rules. Okay, so if he knew people better than anybody did. So if he knew there was someone out begging in front of the Jerusalem temple that should not have been there begging, they could make a living, he would not give them alms. Does that make sense? So you just don't pass out the money because you got it. You have to do it wisely, and that's the whole point of this. All right. Let's see. Let's try to get at least one more chapter in here, or one more thing here. Gary, would you take this one?
Okay. After discussing these matters for several hours and in response to the rich man's request for further and more detailed instruction, Jesus went on to amplify his advice by saying, "While I offer further suggestion concerning your attitude toward wealth, I would admonish you to receive my counsel as given only to you and for your personal guidance. I speak only for myself and to you as an inquiring friend. I adjure you not to become a dictator as to how other rich men shall regard their wealth. I would advise you."
Okay,
And
here's a
don't you
ring.
think that Jesus was picking up that maybe this is something that he would do?
I'm sorry, Pam, I didn't catch that.
I was thinking that, Jesus was anticipating that maybe this was something that this man would do.
Yes, I think so. And I'm going to stop on this paragraph and we'll reread this paragraph next time to finish out this paper, because this is a good place to stop and give us enough for the next meeting. So keep in mind where we are, and we'll start out right from this, and we'll reread this again, because he's going to give advice to this man, further advice to this man about how to take care of his money properly, right? And in reading this and understanding this, it gives us some idea what we should do. So let's stop it there. Let me stop the share and go out to a new share. A prayer of acceptance. Here we go. And I think I'll read the prayer of acceptance today since I'm up again. Prayer of acceptance. Are y'all seeing that? You should be.
Yes.
Okay. Prayer of acceptance. I believe that God is my paradise father and that only by faith am I saved. No sacrifice is necessary. By this same faith, I become a child of God and know that all men and women are my brothers and sisters. We know the Son of God, the sovereign of our universe of Nebanon, is as Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. By allowing the will of God to become my will, I will someday stand in the presence of the Paradise Father. Say this in the name of Jesus Christ, Christ Michael, Jesus of Nazareth. Amen.
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 Amen. Thank you.
Thanks everybody for coming. And it was funny Tuesday. I said, hey, y'all have a nice weekend. So I was on the wrong day. So I'll say it again. Y'all have a nice weekend. And we'll see everybody Tuesday to finish this off.
Sounds
All right.
good.
All right.
Thank
Y'all,
you.
good night,
Thank
everybody.
you. Good
Good
night.
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 Night night.
Good night.